Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. The makers of Maxwell House Coffee return to the air tonight with an hour of entertainment from the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer studios in Hollywood. And here's your host for the evening, who will tell you all about it, Robert Young.
Thank you, Ted.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It's great to be back here again with all the old gang. Fanny Bryce is Baby Snooks with Daddy Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Honest Frank, his friends call him, and Maestro Meredith Wilson, just back from a triumphal tour of the barbershops of England. But on top of that, just listen to this guest list. The stars of MGM's newest picture, Boys Town, Academy Award winner Spencer Tracy and Mickey Rooney, and the charming star of the 20th Century Fox picture, Alexander's Ragtime Band, Miss Alice Faye. Okay, here we go. We start the program off with a scene from...
4 and 7 years Frank. Ago, our fathers brought forth...
Frank.
Upon this continent, a new nation.
Frank,
a
nation Morgan, that was Morgan, born, Morgan, what is this?
A nation. And oh, you've gone...
Listen, you loudmouth. What is all this speech making for?
Well, a very churlish reception, my overweening young featherweight.
Well, that's a fine way to talk, Frank.
Never mind, Wilson. You keep a civil tongue in your furry head. 4 score and 7 years ago, we bore forth.
Wait. Will you please explain this oratory?
My boy, you see before you the living, breathing spirit of George Washington.
George Washington?
Yes.
The man whose name goes ringing down the ages because he always told the truth?
Yes, well, we have other things in common, too. I've been George Washington ever since last night, Bob.
Morgan, you must be exactly 44 years old.
That's right. How did you know?
I've got a brother, 22, and he's only half nuts.
It's just a cheap music hall quit.
Mm.
Last night, I attended a masquerade ball attired as George Washington.
A masquerade?
Yes, and I may say that I was a sensation. You should have heard me. 4 score and 7
Frank,
years ago...
Frank, what has the Gettysburg Address got to do with George Washington?
Well, don't bandy history with me. I simply attended this masquerade dressed as this famous ancestor of mine.
Frank.
And
Frank.
What?
Now he's an ancestor?
Well, very likely. I paid a genealogist $5,000 to trace my lineage.
You did? Well,
yes.
How did you find your family tree?
Pretty shady. My genealogy gets kind of tangled when you get back a few generations, but it's that Washington blood in my veins that has caused me to decide on a career of public service. Vox populi, vox morgani.
Nux vomica.
Thank you. Bob, may I formally ask your support in my race for the senatorship?
What? Have you aspirations for a senatorial seat?
Yes. Bob, when a man has tasted the fruits of success in every other line of endeavor, what else is left? You know of my careers in aviation, in medicine, in the arts. After all this, I feel I owe the public something. I wish now to serve the common people. And since you're the commonest person I know, I ask for your vote.
Why, you big blowhard. You want me to vote for a liar? A man that never had a serious thought? You think of nothing but wine, women, and song.
Who sings? Well, I'll see you later, Bob. I've got a little electioneering to do.
Yes.
So long.
So long. Well. Well, while George Washington is making his trip across the Delaware, we'll go on with the show. Here's a medley of some of the tunes that have become hits during the summer, played by Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. And I'd like to say that while Meredith has spent 6 weeks in England, he seems to be the same unassuming Iowa boy that he was when he went over there. Here he is, Meredith Wilson.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It gives me great pleasure to return to the wireless and to resume my broadcasting.
No speeches.
Righto. Ready, men? Pip-pip. Thank you.
does the jingle bee. Awfully good for have you heard, an angel I married, to have she carried me. Fellow with a kiss, she's sweet and gentle, see it isn't strange, I'm sentimental, she loves me like an angel. And now you've heard, I married an angel, this beautiful change will be so awfully good for me.
Your baton hasn't a British dialect. And now here's something you've all been waiting for, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we bring you Fanny Bryce and her beloved characterization of that impossible child, Baby Snooks. As usual, Daddy Snooks, played by the one and only Hanley Stafford, is in trouble. Drenched to the skin by an unseasonable downpour, he quietly lets himself into the house as the clock strikes.
What a night. Well, so far I'm safe. Nobody's awake. Now to get past the kids' room.
Hello, Daddy.
Oh, Snooks, how come you're up?
It was thunder and lightning and I got scared.
Well, there's nothing to be scared of. Go back to sleep.
What time is it, Daddy?
Oh, it's just 11 o'clock.
How do you know, Daddy?
Well, I can see the time on the hall clock. Yes, it's just 11.
Is it?
Yes.
Then you better get the clock fixed.
What for?
Because it only rang 3 times.
Well, I'll take care of that. Now, go back to sleep. I've got to get out of these wet clothes and get some rest.
Where was your daddy?
I'll tell you in the morning.
Now, tell me now.
No. She'll wake mother up.
Don't you want mommy to wake up?
No, of course I don't.
Then tell me where you was.
I had to attend a business meeting.
Why are your clothes all wet?
Because I had to walk home in the rain.
Why?
Oh, I forgot my wallet.
Oh. Daddy.
What?
Don't you ever win?
Now, listen here, Snooks. You stop that kind of talk. When I tell you I've been to a business meeting, that's the end of it. That's my story, and I expect you to be satisfied. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fine.
But I don't think Mama will be satisfied.
Well, never mind that. I'll angle my way out. I mean, you go to sleep.
I don't wanna. Daddy.
You see? You hear that thunder?
Mm-hmm. Why did it do that?
The heavens are angry because you are not a good little girl.
Oh.
When you misbehave, it rumbles like that as a warning. And when you tell fibs, the thunder gets even louder.
Then I ain't gonna stay here in the morning.
Well, why not?
Because I don't want to hear that awful noise.
Oh, what awful noise?
When you tell Mommy where you was tonight.
Now, what makes you think I won't tell her the truth? Why, I've never told your mother a fib in my life. What's the matter?
I started to laugh, but the thunder scared me.
Well, go to sleep and you won't hear it.
All right, Daddy.
Well, thank heaven. Good night. I've got to get out of these wet clothes before I catch a chill.
Good night.
Good night.
Daddy.
Oh, what do you want now?
Will it thunder if I eat my spinach?
No, but if you don't eat it, it will.
Why?
Because it will.
Does it thunder eat spinach?
Oh, no. Because it's a green vegetable, and green vegetables make red blood.
Green vegetables make red blood?
Yes.
Does red vegetables make green blood?
Oh, of course not.
Why?
Because there's no such thing as a red vegetable.
Beets is red.
Oh, no, they're not. Beets are red in color, but they're really green. Yellow turnips are green. White celery's green. It's a green vegetable. It's green no matter if it's blue.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
No, I feel terrible. The reason they call a red vegetable green is because it contains a chemical substance known as chlorophyll that has no color at all. Now, what's the matter?
Now, I don't feel good.
Well, go to sleep before you wake Mommy up. I mean, go to sleep.
Tell me a story.
Oh, Snooks, please. There, you see, I'm catching a cold. Let me go to bed.
Please tell me a little story.
Oh, I can't remember any stories.
Then make one up.
All right. Some bad boys were throwing stones at a lion, and the man who owned the lion came out and said, if you throw any more stones at the lion, I'll turn him loose and he'll eat you up. And they did, and he did, and the lion did. Good night.
Ah!
Now, what's the matter?
You told me that story before.
I did not. Last time it was about a bear.
But I want to hear another story.
Doubt is to be, Stokes. If you don't go to sleep, you simply must go to sleep now. Well, what are you laughing at, you little scab? I'm catching a cold.
You sound so funny.
Oh, shh. Wait, Bubby. Quiet. I think Bubby's awake.
Bless you, Daddy.
Who's there?
Don't answer her.
Snooks, are you all right?
Yes, Bubby, I saw one.
Is that you?
Say yes, Snooks. I'll be in trouble if she finds out I just came in.
Yes, Mommy, it's me.
Don't tell her I'm here.
Why did your voice sound so funny?
What did I say, Daddy? Cold at the nose.
You hear me? Why did your voice sound so funny?
Because Daddy's got a cold in his nose.
Oh, you! Thank you, Baby Snooks and Hanley Stafford. Thank you. Now here's Ted Pearson.
Well, Bob, with good news back on the air for the fall, I have some good news of my own to contribute. It's news of importance to every lover of good coffee, but particularly to you people who haven't tried Maxwell House coffee lately.
Well, Ted, let's have it.
Well, I guess nearly everybody knows that Maxwell House coffee has been contributing to good living for over three generations, that it's one of the world's really fine coffees. Well, that's not news. But no matter how good a product is, determination and the knowledge that comes from constant research can always find a way to make a good product better. And that's my good news for tonight. Maxwell House has now been made an even better coffee. Yes, everybody who is now enjoying Maxwell House is drinking a coffee that's richer, even more delicious than ever before. Coffee that's been improved in two ways.
That sounds interesting, Ted. What are the two new improvements?
Well, Bob, you know, of course, the first secret of a rare and truly fine coffee is its blend. Well, this already superb blend of the world's choice coffees has now been still further enriched to give you an extra smoothness and mellowness of flavor, an extra full-bodied goodness. And then, all the rare richness of this wonderfully improved Maxwell House blend has been captured and held by a new method of roasting called Radiant Roast. This remarkable roasting method uses radiant, penetrating heat that gives each single coffee bean not just the surface roasting, but an even roast all the way through. You'll get a more tempting cup of coffee because of these new and subtle flavor tones it helps bring out. Yes, on two counts, you'll now discover in Maxwell House a fullness and richness of flavor you may have never known in coffee before. So if you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, ask your grocer for a pound of Maxwell House coffee tomorrow. The coffee that now, more than ever before, is good to the last drop.
A Meredith Wilson arrangement of another new tune that's going places. As Long As You Live.
Thank you.
25 years ago, Irving Berlin wrote a song called Alexander's Ragtime Band. And today, it's one of the biggest hits the country has ever known. It seems a shame that it took 25 years to click. I liked it when it first came out. My nurse used to croon it to me when I was a mere babe in arms. I'll never forget her rocking me on her knee with my little blanket tucked all around me and singing so sweetly, "Come on in here! Come on in here!" Woke up the whole house. That was Meredith Wilson laughing through the courtesy of the British Broadcasting Company.
Thank you.
As I was saying, although my nurse plugged this song all she could, nothing happened till along came a gentleman named Daryl Zanuck who makes pictures for a rival company. I can't mention it naturally here, but I could give you a clue.
Pray do.
Well, I'll give you the name of this picture company in the form of a little puzzle. I have 19 pennies in my left hand, all dated 1919. I have one penny in my right hand, dated 1 year later. Now, if you can guess the date on this 20th cent, you're a fox.
Well, I've got it already.
No.
Universal.
Meredith, before I tell you whether you're right or wrong, tell me this. Did you figure out the answer, or did you just guess?
Oh, I figured it out, Bob. It was very simple. Pennies, universal medium of exchange. 1919, the year the company was founded. Universal city. And besides, the night watchman.
What's the night watchman got to do with it? Where does he come in?
Well, he has a private entrance in the back over there.
Now,
wait
a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. You want me to give you the puzzle again?
Pray do.
Pray do. 19 pennies, my left hand date, 1991 penny, my right hand date, 1 year later. If you can guess the date on this 20th cent, you're a fox.
Oh, well, that's not the way you said it before.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. I've got it now.
What is it?
RKO.
Meredith, this is going to be a shock to you, but you haven't the right answer yet.
Oh, well, that's very discouraging.
Now, listen, kid, why don't you go over in the corner and practice the puzzle by yourself? I know you'll get it.
Well, sure, I'll get it. I'll try it right now. Can I do it with nickels?
Nickels? Why do you want to do it with nickels?
Well, I haven't got any cents.
That's what I thought. All right, Meredith, do it with nickels.
Thank you, but I'll do it with the nickels.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, ladies and gentlemen, what I started to say before I was diverted by the puzzle king is that Alexander's Ragtime Band is a swell picture, and that one of the reasons is the star of the picture, who is the toast of America today and a guest on our program tonight, Miss Alice Faye.
Thank you, Bob.
Alice, what have you got there in your hand?
Oh, nothing, Bob. I just got a telegram from Tony.
Oh, your husband, Tony Martin?
Yes. You see, he's on tour with his band, and he heard I was going to broadcast, so he sent me this little message.
Well, I think that's very sweet, and I think our audience would love to hear it.
Oh, no.
Now, go on. Read it, Alice.
No, I couldn't.
Go on. What if it is a little personal? It's those intimate glimpses into a star's personal life that endear her to the fans. Go on. Read it.
All right, Bob. My darling.
Isn't that beautiful?
My darling, we open tomorrow at the Stanley Theater in Pittsburgh. With five lovely acts of vaudeville, a great feature, a newsreel, another short subject. Four shows daily, matinees 35 cents, evenings 55, children half price, smoking in the balcony, regards, Tony.
Well, now that's a sweet thought if I ever heard one. How much are the load seats?
Oh, P.S., load seats are 75 cents.
Alice. Alice Faye, is that the reason you wanted to come on this program to plug your husband's show?
Oh, that's only one reason. But the other reason is I'm dying to meet Frank Morgan.
Frank Morgan? Oh, honey, it makes sense to plug Tony's show, but why would anybody want to meet Frank Morgan?
Well, ever since I've heard about all the things he does on this program...
What things?
Well, it isn't everybody that can sing the songs on the program and be the principal comedian and play in all those wonderful dramatic sketches.
Morgan does that?
Isn't it wonderful? And I almost died when I heard he was Baby Snook.
Alice, have you ever listened to this program?
All the time. That's why I was so interested when I met this MGM producer at the masquerade last night. He was telling me all about Frank Morgan.
Oh, you were at the masquerade, huh?
Yes, I was dressed as Pocahontas.
Pocahontas. Now, well, who was this MGM producer?
Well, I don't know who he was because he wore a mask, but... he was dressed as George Washington.
George Washington, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Alice, I think it's high time you met your hero. Hey, Frank.
Yes, Bob.
I want you to meet Miss Faye. You must have seen her in Alexander's Ragtime Band.
Alexander's Band. No, I don't believe so. What instrument does she play?
Bob means the picture. picture, Mr. Morgan.
Oh, the picture. Yeah,
Miss Fay was just telling me about the masquerade last night. You were there, weren't you?
Well, of course, I certainly was.
How are you dressed, Mr. Morgan?
I was dressed as George Washington.
George Washington?
Yes.
But there was only one George Washington at the ball.
Yes, well, that was me. I spent most of my evening dancing with a silly, lovesick little blonde dressed up as Pocahontas.
Oh, a silly little
Frank,
blonde, huh?
Frank.
Yeah, well, maybe I couldn't call her silly. After all, I'm fascinating in a brutish sort of a way. I fought her off as long as I could, and believe me, I had a terrible time explaining about the lip rouge to my wife.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
Mr. Morgan.
Yes.
Are you aware there was only one Pocahontas at the ball last night?
Well, of course I am. You'd think there was 100 the way she managed to corner me everywhere I went.
And you stand here and tell everybody that you kissed this Pocahontas?
I can say, well, no, to be truthful, she kissed me.
Oh.
She couldn't seem to resist, poor girl. But just the old story, you know, of the moth and the flame.
Wait till Tony Martin hears about this.
Well... Oh, do you know Tony Martin?
Frank, it might interest you to know that Tony Martin pays Alice Faye's rent.
Well, that sounds just like Tony Martin, all right. Boy, what a spender. You know, I was in Boston with him last week, and the way he spent dough on every little dame around that theater. Flowers, candy, gin...
Frank, Nick.
What's the matter? Can't we mention booze on this program?
Mr. Morgan, I don't believe a single word of this. And I'll have you know that Tony Martin is my husband.
Well, you don't ask... husband. I have to run along to the costumers. The man told me if I didn't return my George Washington suit by 12 o'clock tonight, I'd turn into a pumpkin. Well, so long, Mrs. Martin.
Hey, Bob.
What do you want?
Why, I've got the answer to your puzzle now. Since I've worked it out with Nichols, it's much easier.
All right, what studio is it?
Sells Nickel International.
Sells Nickel International. Yeah. Meredith, will you please get up there and conduct Miss Faye's song?
A song? Oh, yeah, sure, so help me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Alice Faye sings a ballad that is rapidly gaining in popularity throughout the country. It's called To Help Me.
My story is not a new one. The same old plot, the tried and true one. My scene, the lamppost on a corner. The time, the lonely hour of midnight. My cast is a boy and a girl. In love. Darling, listen. That ain't true. He don't mean anything to me. Can't you see I love you? Only you. Honest. So help me. May I never see the moon on high. May I never see the stars close by. So help me if I don't love you. Oh, help me. May I never know a breath of spring. May I never hear the birds that sing. So help me. If I don't love you, and if I lie, then rain should fall from heaven and light each day with its teeming. Night should never bring sleep with its dreaming, sweet dreaming. Oh, help me. May I never see the sight of you. Without you, what am I to do? Oh, help me. If you don't love me, I'd cry. And if you said goodbye, I know that I would lay right down and die. I never knew I could die.
love anybody, honey, like I'm loving you. And if I lie, then rain should fall from heaven and blight each day with its teeming. Night should never bring sleep with its dreaming, sweet dreaming. So help me, may I never see the sight of you. And without you, what am I to do? So help me, so help me if I don't love you.
Grand, Alice. Thank you very much. Now, how about a chorus of Alexander's Ragtime Band?
Love it. Love it, Bob. Come on in here. Come on in here. Alexander's Ragtime Band. Come on in here. Come on in here. It's the best band in the land. They can play a bugle call like you never heard before. So natural that you want to go to war. That's just the bestest band what I am. Oh, my honey lamb, come on along. Come on along. Let me take you by the hand. Up to the man, up to the man. Who's the leader of the band? And if you care, if you hear the Swanee River played in ragtime, come on in here. Come on in here. Alexander's Ragtime Band. Come on along. Come on along, let me take you by the hand. Up to the man, up to the man, who's the leader of the band. And if you care to hear the Swanee River play in ragtime. Come on in here, come on in here, Alexander Ragtime.
So, with good news well launched for another season, we resume that pleasant custom of ours on these Thursday nights together. A moment of relaxation over a steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee. As a matter of fact, I don't know of any better way than this to introduce more and more people to greater coffee pleasure. That's why we always say, your only ticket of admission is just your loyalty to Maxwell House.
I'm pretty sure, Bob, we'll all enjoy Maxwell House more than ever now that we're drinking the new Maxwell House all over the country, with its extra rich flavor and deeper satisfaction.
Right you are, Ted. Okay, Meredith, just pour out a little of that stimulating music of yours that keeps such good company with a grand cup of Maxwell House coffee. We'll continue our good news in just a minute with Spencer Tracy and Mickey Rooney and scenes from Boys Town and a song from Baby Snooks.
We now pause briefly for station identification.
It is now my privilege, ladies and gentlemen, to present the chief of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, Mr. Louis B. Mayer.
It is a very real pleasure to join with you tonight in welcoming another good news season. I find particular significance in tonight's reunion with you, since this also marks the opening of motion pictures' greatest year, a season pledged for the achievement of the finest entertainment in the world of dramatic art, for the further fulfillment of the ideals and ambitions for which the screen has strived. Radio and screen are joined together in this common bond of reaching for higher standards in entertainment. Their aims are mutual, their efforts welded toward a greater appreciation of cultural and spiritual influence in entertainment of popular appeal. In the motion picture Boys Town, which Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer offers as one of its first contributions to this season, we find combined inspirational and entertainment qualities. Boys Town is vastly more than a motion picture story. It is a dramatization of the life of a great humanitarian, his dream of establishing a sanctuary where boys, adrift in the tenderest years of life, might grow to manhood, free of the temptations of the streets. Since first founded in Omaha, Nebraska,
21 years ago, Boystown has sent more than 4,000 good citizens, God-fearing, honest men out into the world. The realization of the dream of a young Irish priest who believes, as he believes now, that there is no bad boy. Boystown pictures the lives of all these boys. It is the story of this good priest, the discouragement, heartache, tragedy he found as he toiled, that these friendless, abandoned boys might be saved. From its humble beginning in a ramshackle rooming house, Boystown has grown through these years into the wonderful institution it is today, a city of little men and a magnificent inspiration to all mankind. We are going to present now some scenes from the picture, and we welcome to our stage those splendid artists, Spencer Tracy and Mickey Rooney.
Boystown is a true story of Father Flanagan's career. It begins in a Middle Western city where Father Flanagan is a young priest. He is already interested in the crime problem and down-and-outers of all kinds, but he hasn't yet got his big idea. Tonight he is to visit Dan Farrow, a convicted murderer, in his death house cell. It is Dan's last night on earth. And while he's waiting for Father Flanagan, he sends out word that he wants to confess his crime. The warden enters the cell.
Well, my lad, they tell me you want to confess.
Yeah.
That'll help the jury. They convicted you on circumstantial evidence. You understand?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Public opinion, too. Clear that up. Justice itself will feel easier.
I'm doing it because I'm scared. May help the big rap when I go through that last door.
You might as well do a real job. I've got a couple of newspaper men and the judge who sentenced you.
Oh, can't you stop that singing?
It's his turn next. You confess, he sings.
Okay. Bring on your gang.
Good. Anything I can do for you, Dan?
How about a drink?
Okay. Here you are.
Oh, thanks.
Well, go ahead and drink it.
No, I think I won't.
Well, I'll be...
Good boy, Dan.
Oh, Father Flanagan. You want to see him?
Oh, sure. I asked for him. He knew me when.
Okay. Good evening, Father Flanagan.
Good evening, Warden. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Father.
I'll leave you two alone together for a minute while I get the others. Oh, Dan's decided to talk, Father.
Oh.
Well, Father, how long have I got?
Eternity starts in 45 minutes, Dan.
What happens when that door bangs shut behind you?
A bad minute or two?
Oh, yeah, I know. After that.
Oh, Dan, that's been a secret for a million years. You can't expect to crack that in a few minutes.
Father, would you be afraid to die?
No.
Why not, if you know what happens?
Well, Dan, I've made mistakes, but I've been sorry for them. I've tried to make up for them.
If you killed a rat and it was coming to him, could you find some way of being sorry for that?
Dan, life and death should be left to the creator of life and death. Here comes the warden again. He's got the judge and the reporter.
Oh, please stay. Will you, Father?
Sure, Dan, I'll stay.
Hiya, Judge.
Hello, Dan.
Well, Judge, the young man wants to admit his debt to the state.
What's that? My debt to the state?
If he'd done this sooner, the debt wouldn't be so big.
Is that what this is all about? You're going to take my life because I owe the state something, huh? When I was a kid, 12 years old, my mother died. Did I go on the cuff to the state for the gutters I slept in? Is that it?
That's just sniveling. The state reached its arms out 3 years...
In the reformatory. When I went in, cupping a loaf of bread was a job. When I came out, I could rob a bank. Listen, big shot. I'm going out that way in a few minutes, so you're getting the lowdown. Where was the state when a lonesome, starving kid cried himself to sleep in a flop house with a lot of drunks, hobos, and tramps? Is that when this debt started? The only pals I had a chance at were kids in the alley, and I had to be taught to string along. Just before we got out of the state's arms, the reformatory, we made up a gang, 6 of us, old pals. We bet our lives across the board and let it ride. Oh, sure. Your mouths pop open for that one. That's Greek to you wise guys, ain't it? One of them turned rat for state's evidence, and I killed him. But get this. If I'd had one friend, just one friend when I was 12, I wouldn't be standing here like this. Now go on. Get out of here. You're a lot of mustering, Seth. Get out. Get out.
Listen, Father. I'm sorry for my mistakes.
This experience gives Father Flanagan his revolutionary idea. From a modest beginning with half a dozen homeless waifs, Boystown grew in 3 years to a small community of 200 boys. 200 boys well on their way to becoming good citizens. Now at the request of Joe Marsh, a gangster in prison, Father Flanagan calls on the gangster's younger brother, Whitey Marsh, played by Mickey Rooney. Joe wants his brother to go straight and has begged Father Flanagan to take Whitey to Boystown. Father Flanagan finds him playing cards with some other boys in a tenement room.
I'll call that and raise a quarter.
I'll raise that a half a buck.
Half a buck? Oh, that's over the limit.
Yeah, cut it out, Whitey.
Hello, boys. Hello, Father Flanagan.
Hello, Father. Hiya, Doc.
Which one of you is Whitey Marsh? I've got a message for Whitey. I'd like to talk to him alone.
So long, Whitey. I got a ball.
Yeah, see you later, Whitey. Hey, guys, where you going? I'm out about a buck ten.
Well, we'll see you later.
Don't worry, get your bill back.
Sure, kid.
So you're Whitey, huh?
Well, maybe I am and maybe I ain't. What's it to you?
Well, now let's start by putting out that cigarette.
Hey.
And get your feet down off that table.
Well, for the love of...
Now that's better. Whitey, I saw your brother Joe just a little while ago.
Yeah?
We had a long talk about you, Whitey. Joe wants you to come with me to Boystown.
You got a swell chance taking me to that joint.
That's right, a swell chance. I've got $280 that your brother's given me to take care of you.
I don't care if he gave you $1 million. What am I going to do in a broken-down nursery like Boystown?
Oh, there are a lot of things you could do. We've got machine shops, carpenter shops, printing presses, farming... You know, I think you might like farming. Good for you. Keep you out in the open. Put some hair on your chest.
You think you're going to make a plow jockey out of me? You've got another thing coming.
Now, look, Whitey. In a pinch, I can be tougher than you are, and I guess maybe this is the pinch. Now, you're going with me to Boystown because that's the way your brother wants it, and that's the way I want it.
Okay, Doc. But I'll tell you right now, don't expect me to stay there very long.
Well, Whitey, here we are. This is Boystown.
Bigger than I thought it was, but I still don't like it.
Now, come on, get out and meet some of the boys. Hello, boys.
Hello.
Boys, this is Whitey Marsh. Whitey, I won't try to introduce you to all these fellas. You probably couldn't remember their names anyway.
Okay, by me. Got a lunch counter? When do we eat?
When the bell rings. Oh, here's one boy that you have to know. This is Freddie Fuller, the mayor of Boystown.
Hello, Whitey.
Hiya.
I'll place Whitey in your charge, sir.
Okay by me. I don't like a lot of people looking at me like I was a freak or something.
Now I'll show you around, Whitey.
You have to do that.
Yeah, that's what we always do. Now, over there on the left is the band room. That's where the fellas practice.
Yeah, is there any poker players in the mob?
No.
Got a match?
No smoking, Whitey.
Oh, just nice boys, huh? Say, what's that skyscraper over there, you know?
That's our own branch of the United States Post Office.
Well, well, what do you think of that?
On a clear day, you can see Omaha from here.
Well, then what do you got? Hey, how'd you get to be mayor? Did Flanagan make you mayor?
No, Father Flanagan didn't. I was elected by ballot. We have an election every 6 months.
Oh, it's just like playing house, huh? Well, I guess plenty of kids taking on the lam around here with no fences or nothing.
No, there never was a wall or fence around this place. Father Flanagan once told us that a fence can't keep a fella in if he doesn't want to stay. It's all worked in an honor system.
Honor system? Guy would be a dope to try to do anything around here anyway with 200 spies ready to run and tell teacher on him.
There's no squealing. When you do something wrong, you always go to Father Flanagan and squeal on yourself.
You want to know something? I think you and Father Flanagan and this whole joint is screwing.
Well, it's not hard to see that Father Flanagan is going to have trouble with Whitey Marsh. But he doesn't give up just because Whitey looks like a difficult problem. He keeps on patiently working with the boy. But one night, Whitey slips away from Boystown and gets into trouble. He's apparently involved somehow with a bank robbery. He's been shot in the leg. And the tragic part of it is that this occurs at a time when any sort of scandal can ruin Boys Town, deprive 250 boys of the only home they've ever had, and break Father Flanagan's heart. Whitey's in the infirmary at Boys Town, and Father Flanagan comes to see him, determined to get at the truth.
The wound is superficial, Father. Nothing to worry about.
Leave us alone, will you, sister?
Yes, Father.
All right, Whitey, let's have it.
What?
The whole story.
I don't know nothing to tell.
Now, stop that. They found your cap near the bank. They followed the trail of the church where I found you.
Why don't you let me alone?
If I hadn't got there first, you'd be in jail now. Whitey. Whitey, I don't believe you're guilty.
Oh, you might as well save your breath. I ain't talking.
It was a bad day when I brought you here. I've always said there wasn't any such thing in the world as a bad boy. I've built my life on it. You're the only boy in all these years who didn't have a heart someplace that I could reach, somehow, sometime. Whitey, over 200 boys have a home here, but tomorrow night they won't have any home, and that's up to you, Whitey, because I've never tried as hard with any boy in my life. I've never had to.
I ain't got nothing to tell nobody, nothing to tell a thing.
Were you mixed up in robbing that bank, killing that night watchman?
I heard shots at the bank. I got scared. I ran the alley and got slugged. Somebody picked me up and took me to the place where you found me. That's all I know.
You're lying. You know a lot more than that.
I just told you all I know.
Who picked you up in that alleyway and carried you? You're shielding someone.
Oh, I'm too dizzy and sick to take a licking like this.
Are you going to let it go at that? Are you going to see these boys turned out into the roads, the alleys, the reformatories, and worse? Are you going to see them lose their home?
I've told you all I can tell you.
All right, Whitey. That licks me. Yes, it was a sad, bad day when I brought you here. It was indeed. The sheriff left a deputy to watch you. I'll turn you over to the police tomorrow.
Honor comes to most men only too often after they have gone from the earthly scene of their accomplishments. But the character played by Spencer Tracy happens to be an exception, a very much alive young man, the man whose faith and courage made Boys Town possible. So now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet him, the founder and director of Boys Town, the Christ-inspired servant of God, Father Edward J. Flanagan.
Mr. Mayor, the world will thank you for sponsoring this fine motion picture. I want to express my thanks to Mr. John Considine, Jr., the producer of the picture, Mr. Norman Torog, the director, for the wonderful conception, the way to carry out this story of Boys Town, which has been in my heart for so many years. I myself saw the completed picture for the first time this afternoon, and I got a real thrill out of it. It carried me back to the early days of my struggle, and I saw myself again, a young priest, trying to get Boys Town started. Of course, I never was as handsome as Spencer Tracy, but that made it all the more enjoyable for me. I believe the picture makes perfectly clear the principles for which I have stood. These principles may be summed up briefly for any parents who may be listening now in the phrase you will hear Mr. Tracy use in the picture: there is no such thing as a bad boy. Thank you.
Thank you, Father Flanagan. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye.
No, keep quiet.
Why?
Because Mr. Young is talking.
Oh.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye.
We're not...
Snooks, I told you to keep quiet.
Just a minute, Daddy. What is it, Snooks?
I want to sing a song.
Now, look here, young lady.
That's all right. If she wants to sing, let her sing. What would you like to sing, Snooks?
A Kiss for the Cat.
Fine. Hit it, Meredith.
I dropped it. A little girlie picked it up, and she put it in her pocket.
Snooks, what color was it?
I don't know.
Yes, you do. Now, what's the color of your new party dress?
Oh, black.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is, because I fell in the mud.
Well, what color was it before?
I don't know.
Yellow?
Huh?
The color. Yellow? Yellow? What are you doing?
You told me to yell.
No, no, the color was yellow.
Oh, it was my little yellow magic.
Well, that was beautiful, Baby Snooks. Thank you very much. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Oh, Bob.
Oh, the senator's in again. What is it, Frank?
Bob, what's the matter with that Alice Faye? I just asked her for a vote, and she hit me with a stick.
She did?
Yes.
Well, I'd like to be around when you ask Tony Martin for his vote.
Oh, well, what's one vote, more or less? The modern political technique calls for mass solicitation, my boy. The single vote is a thing of the past.
Listen, Your Excellency, I'm laying 18 to 1 right now. You don't get a single vote.
A brash prediction, my short-sighted young friend. Or as a sage old Frenchman once said, a bon chat, bon rat. Here's the first program, and they can't stick to English.
Never mind the proverbs. What about the votes?
Well, for instance, every doctor in the state will vote for me.
Every doctor? Why should they?
Bob, they aren't going to let down a brother surgeon. After a lifetime spent in the medical profession, I'm giving up my practice to serve the state. If, as Senator Morgan, I can be of assistance to my former colleagues in the medical profession, I shall deem
Frank,
it only just...
Frank,
and, what?
Did I hear you say a lifetime in the medical profession?
Certainly. A fascinating career, Bob, and a rewarding one. Why, my very first case was a difficult operation for which I charged my patient $4,000.
Good heavens, Frank. What did he have?
$4,000. After that, I started to charge real money. I'll never forget the tracheotomy I performed on a carpenter using the man's own bris and bait. What the... Well, I meant brace and bit. It doesn't matter. If that doesn't get me the medical vote, nothing will.
Right. Don't tell me you're going to have the gall to represent yourself as an ex-doctor to a bunch of doctors.
I resent the implication of chicanery. For three decades, I have toiled in the vineyards of Pasteur, of Lister, of the Mayo brothers. Why, I spent 5 solid years in chemical research investigating the nitrates.
Chemical research? What do you know about nitrates?
Well, they're cheaper than day rates. I know all about chemistry. Who do you think discovered the higher alkaloid, the lower enzyme, the medium boiled egg? I once spent 2 weeks in my laboratory, night and day, without food or sleep. It was just before insulin was discovered, and I was on the track of a very similar substance. Time after time, I distilled, I filtered, I redistilled, I analyzed, I oxygenized, I scrutinized. I was like a madman on the trail of my great discovery. And when finally I had isolated the pure compound, a little flask of solution, scarcely more than a gram, I felt like Archimedes 10,000 years ago when he cried, Eureka!
Had you discovered insulin, Frank?
No, it turned out to be Angostura bitters.
I suppose after a triumph like that, you specialize in chemical research.
No, Bob, my real love was surgery. During my tenure as chief surgeon at St. Genevieve's, I was known as No Nerves Morgan, the surgeon with X-ray eyes and fingers of steel. No case was too desperate, too hopeless for me. I'm the only man in the world that ever performed a double cardiectomy.
Double cardiectomy? What's that?
Two hearts.
Three spades.
I pass.
Frank, couldn't you just give us a little hint about the Morgan technique?
Morgan technique? Well, I generally take them out to dinner, then we go somewhere and dance, maybe a highball or two, and by that time,
Frank,
I've got them for life.
I'm talking about surgery.
Oh, surgery!
Yeah.
Oh, yes, surgery, surgery. Yes, well, you probably read of my greatest European triumph. It was written up in the medical journals a few years ago.
Well, Senator, I mean, Doctor, I don't seem to recall the article. It was in the Lancet of what date?
Yes, well, I don't remember offhand, but it was in the neighborhood of April 14th, 1936, page 13 to 19 inclusive. A very ably written article.
Who wrote it?
I did.
Well, what was this rare piece of butchery?
It was a radical osteoparaphrectomy.
complicated by a severe case of mange. I performed the operation in the presence of the entire Royal College of Surgeons in the famous operating amphitheater of St. John's Wood.
Did you use Dr. Cronkite incision?
No. Cronkite was contraindicated. I used Perret's half moon. The picture of that room will never be erased from my mind. The tenth throng, nervous with excitement. The gleaming knives, the blinding lights.
Sounds like the opening of a Hollywood meat market.
Yeah. No. There was a deathly stillness as I entered the room. I tightened my rubber gloves, glanced at the anesthetist manometer. I saw that quick action was impulsive. And without turning from the patient, I barked to the instrument nurse. Oh, oh! I mean... Scalpel, please. Two deft strokes with a keen blade, the nurse supplied 10 hemostats, and I coolly went to work. For 3 long hours, I amazed my colleagues with the dexterity of my technique. And when I tied off the last suture and removed my gloves, pandemonium broke loose. To a man, the College of Surgeons rose to their feet and rocked me with a salvo of applause.
They applauded while the patient was still on the table?
Yes.
What did you do?
Well, I took out his tonsils for an encore. Well, Bob, I've got to go down to the Bar Association. As an attorney of 20 years standing, I expect to pick up a couple of votes down there. Well, so long.
So long. Now, Tetcher.
Thank you, Bob. Earlier on tonight's program, I told you all about the new and improved Maxwell House coffee with this new flavor thrill. Now, to make sure that you get all this marvelous new richness and fullness of flavor, we packed this new and improved blend in the same familiar blue super vacuum can to bring Maxwell House coffee to you roaster fresh. You see, when ground coffee is packed in ordinary containers so the air can get at it, its flavor fades just as my voice is fading.
All right, Ted, come on back. We get the idea.
Well, I guess you all know I did that just to show you how the flavor and body of coffee fades when it's packed in ordinary containers. You see, all coffee, whether ground or in the beans, starts to lose flavor after roasting. And ground coffee, when packed in ordinary containers where the air can reach it, loses as much as 45%, nearly half its flavor in only 9 days. But this loss of flavor can't happen to Maxwell House. Maxwell House is taken, still warm and fragrant, from the roasting ovens, put into the super vacuum can from which all air has been removed, and then sealed, so no air can reach the coffee afterwards. You get it, roaster fresh. And this is important to you. Maxwell House comes in 2 grinds to fit your own method of coffee making. Do you make drip coffee? Well, then buy the special drip grind Maxwell House for every type of drip or glass coffee maker. Do you make percolator or boiled coffee? Then buy the regular grind Maxwell House. Then treat your family to this new deliciousness, this greater coffee pleasure. First thing tomorrow, get a pound of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. And please remember that Maxwell House coffee, now a better coffee than ever, is still selling and will continue to sell at low prices friendly to your budget. So if you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, then this is the time to make friends with Maxwell House.
Meredith Wilson's series of concert hall presentations was a musical highlight of last year's Good News program. Tonight we resume the series with Meredith's arrangement of a composition that is known and loved by every American young and old. Holy Speak's famous song, Sylvia. Thank you.
ladies and gentlemen, I know you won't want to miss our good news program next Thursday because we're going to play host to Miss Norma Shearer, whose new picture, Marie Antoinette, is breaking records in theaters all over the country. We'll also welcome back to our program next Thursday a little girl you've all been asking for, Judy Garland. This is all in addition to the regular gang, Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. I'll be seeing you next Thursday, and in the meantime, remember, go to the movies and take the family with you.
This is Ted Pearson saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.